The Coffee Break Liberty Podcast, Episode 38. Welcome back, everybody, to the Coffee Break Liberty Podcast with me, your host, Leo Sowers, and the Liberty Dog himself, Gino, who is always standing on guard for Liberty, even today while he takes another siesta. And I want to thank you all for allowing me to come kind of short notice with this emergency broadcast, if you want to call it that, about what's going on in Ukraine. But before we do that, I want to remind you guys about the store that is at coffeebreakliberty.com. So if you go to coffeebreakliberty.com, in the upper portion of the page, there is a tab for the store, and I want you to click on it. And when you do, you are going to see the best mugs you've ever seen. They're amazing mugs. They have the Coffee Break Liberty logo on them and other libertarian-esque and anarchist-type symbology and phrases and quotes. But not only are there mugs, there are t-shirts and stickers and laptop cases and phone cases. So I want you to go to coffeebreakliberty.com and check out that store. But before you do, when you get to coffeebreakliberty.com on that homepage there, hang around for about 10 to 15 seconds and you should get hit with a prompt asking you to sign up for the newsletter. And I'm telling you, sign up for that newsletter, because when you do, you're going to get a discount code for 10% off of your first order from the coffeebreakliberty.com store. So that again is go to coffeebreakliberty.com, click on that store tab, and get yourself a mug. Well, there's no other way to put this, but the last time we were on here, I made a prediction that Russia was not going to invade Ukraine, and then of course, a few days later, they did. They invaded Ukraine, and it's going on right now as I sit here and broadcast on, well, this podcast. That really surprised me and a lot of people. I was hoping that it would not come down to this. Many people, of course, were the Ukrainians and the Russian soldiers, I'm sure, most of all. But here we are. We're in a situation now where Vladimir Putin has sent hundreds of thousands, it looks like, Russian soldiers over the border from Belarus and Russia into Ukraine. The first day or two, he called it a peacekeeping mission in some of the far eastern regions. Dumba, I believe, is how you pronounce one of them. The other one, I don't quite remember. But these are regions that had kind of broken off. They had really broken off from proper Ukraine. And it's been that way for almost 8 years now, these two regions, and Crimea as well. But these two regions, too, are very heavily ethnic Russian. They are Russian, essentially. They're only Ukraine in name. So I want to talk about quite a few things during this podcast. One of them is how badly this invasion is going for Russia, and why a lot of this resistance may not really end up being a good thing for the Ukrainian people. As bad as that may sound, you're resisting against a country whose, you know, idea of, you know, using people as bullet fodder, to put it lightly, is, you know, it's high up there. They don't mind. They don't mind losing their own people. They definitely don't mind killing people from another country. And with the constant failures and mess-ups that are going on with the invasion itself, it is just angering Putin more. The Russian generals that are in charge of this look like fools. But it has to be noted, too, that the Ukrainian people and their military and the weapons that the Brits and the U.S. sold that military or gave to them, whichever happened, are doing a lot of damage to the Russian invasion. No other way to put it. It's also coupled with the Ukrainian people are tough. Whether, you know, they're there because for patriotic reasons or they're there because they were conscripted, which something we'll get into probably later on. They're tough. They're staring down, the second, third largest military in the world? And they're holding on pretty well for what it is, right? Now, it has to be also remembered that Ukraine is a pretty big country population-wise. It's over 40 million people. And the country itself is about the size of Texas. So it's pretty big. It's not some small, you know, smaller country like Moldova, which, you know, is right next door. So the area that has to be captured, the area that the Russians are trying to capture, at least, you know, quell, is about the size of Texas. Now they're going for the cities, of course, you know, sent, you know, the reasoning that Putin gave for the invasion at first, like I said, was for peacekeeping in these western regions. Well, after that, he invaded, you know, proper Ukraine, I think a day or two later, saying, well, now we have to denazify the regime and demilitarize Ukraine. They have to denazify Ukraine and demilitarize it. They have to take out the military and essentially take out the regime that is running the show right now. I think we're all kind of aware of what's going on, and that's what Putin said he's doing. But why does he need to do this? Why does he feel he needs to do this? Why are leaders in Russia, and there's enough people in Russia, it's not just Putin, there's enough people in Russia that think this is a valid invasion. They think this is necessary. Their security concerns are high. When I made that prediction on the last podcast of Russia not invading and it just being a bunch of saber rattling, I was wrong. But had I known one thing, and I didn't know, to my ignorance, you know, my fault, I didn't know that the president of Ukraine the week prior had said he wanted to now start bringing a nuclear weapon program into Ukraine while trying to join NATO. Well, yeah, okay, if you're Russia and NATO is your antithesis, right? They're not, I mean, they're kind of your enemy, right? It's a sphere of influence. You don't want them getting closer. You don't want them right on your border now with nuclear weapons. But that's what's going on. That is the catalyst, right? That is one of the major reasons Putin and several other Russians, not just Putin alone, feel they need to invade Ukraine. How did it get to this, though? This wasn't a problem 8 years ago. It wasn't a problem 20 years ago. What happened? So now we have to talk a little bit about the history of Ukraine. And I'm going to get some of these names wrong, and I don't even know all the names and the exact dates, but it's going to be a general broad stroke. First, we're going to talk about why Ukraine looks the way it does on a map. That was done in the 50s. So when it was part of the Soviet Union, you know, nobody really cared, so they just drew lines on these maps and gave certain regions to certain political establishments. So they had their own version of like governors. I don't remember the exact name of the office, but you know, they had their own version of like a governor. Of course, they weren't elected, but they ran a certain region of the Soviet Union. Well, that region was Ukraine, which is now Ukraine, proper Ukraine on the map today. Now the borders are changing clearly, but you know, okay, Ukraine of, you know, 10 weeks ago, right? The borders there were run 50 years ago by the same, they were run rather by one centralized organization for Ukraine, but they were part of the Soviet Union, okay? That's how Crimea got there and those other two Western, now they're republics, but the Donbas region, I forget the other name. But it didn't really matter in the 50s when this when they started drawing these lines. It didn't matter because it was all Soviet Union stuff. It didn't matter. So they didn't care. But when it broke up in the 90s, well, that whole section took off and said, hey, we're now Ukraine. This entire section that was on the map, we're now Ukraine. Not really taking into account at the time that there are Russians, lots of Russians, about 10% of the country, living within the borders, right? These are people that, you know, they identify as Russian. They don't identify as Ukrainian. And Ukrainian and Russian, there are differences, right? There are cultural differences, there are language differences. Very similar in some ways, you know, as a Westerner, you probably wouldn't see it on face value. But if you lived there, trust me, you're going to know. You know, if you live in California, you know if somebody's from Northern California or Southern California. You betcha somebody's going to know if they're from a different ethnic background in Ukraine versus Russia. They're going to know. Well, when they broke off in the 90s, Everybody was worried about the nuclear weapons. So what was the deal? What were all these countries that had nuclear weapons inside their borders now supposed to do? Well, a lot of them gave them up, and Ukraine was one of them. Ukraine gave up their nuclear weapon status because they realized it probably isn't a good idea to be between the West and Russia, who's really unstable at the time in the early 90s, and have a lot of nuclear weapons. So the plan was, we're going to give up our nuclear weapons. We're not going to go nuclear, but we are going to get under the umbrella, the defense umbrella of the United States and the West. Now, these are all handshake deals. There was a Budapest Accord that was signed in Hungary that did kind of lay this out. It was written, but it, you know, a lot of people, there's people on both, you know, sides of the issue that agree that it is, oh, well, it's in writing. And then there's others like, yeah, it's in writing. But, you know, none of the country, the regime rather, that signed that accord, you know, with the United States at the time in the West, they haven't been around for almost 30 years. So how can you say that, you know, they have to abide by it, things like that? So they've been loosely abiding by it. You know, okay, we're not going to have nuclear weapons. We're not going to have nuclear weapons. And the U.S. has been like, yeah, we got your back. We got your back. Well, now, push come to shove, the Ukrainians, and I am skipping a bit here, but now, you know, recently, as we just spoke, the Ukrainians now are trying to nuke up. And that's what sparked Vladimir Putin wanting to come into Ukraine. But what was that? What was that 30 years I just skipped over? You're wondering? Oh, don't worry. Those are just revolution after revolution after revolution, sponsored by either the United States and the West or Russia. So that's one thing a lot of people seem to forget. That you will see it every once in a while if you've been spending time on the internet, especially around libertarians. They'll either point out, well, Russia is the bad guy because they're invading Ukraine and they're only the bad guy. U.S. can do no wrong. And then you'll have the other end of the spectrum that, no, the U.S. provoked them. They're the ones that do all this wrong. They've sponsored all these revolutions, which is true. Both of these can be true at the same time, guys. The West and Russia should have left Ukraine alone. This is a hard thing, apparently, for some Beltway libertarians to understand. Had the West and Russia left Ukraine alone, we'd all be a lot better off. But no, both the West and Russia have been messing around with Ukraine, trying to install different regimes in there for the past 30 years, and this is the result we get. The most recent one, that looks like it's probably going to get toppled here soon by the Russian invasion, but the most recent one was installed by the West under President Obama. It's a neo-Nazi-backed fascist regime. With a broken quote unquote democracy, it's labeled the most corrupt country in Europe. This is not some bastion of democracy. President Zelensky has shut down over 6 television stations and radio stations that spoke bad about his regime. This is not some bastion of free speech and democracy. Now, what they have there may be better than what's coming from Russia. I'll concede that. But let's not act like these are two, you know, it's one David and Goliath. It's one white knight and one black knight. No, it's garbage. And who suffers? The Ukrainian people. That's who suffers the most right now. And Russian soldiers that don't want to be there. That's another part of the invasion I kind of glossed over. Nobody wants these Russian soldiers that seem to be fighting. They're getting captured in droves, and they don't seem to want to be there at all. They want nothing to do with this. It seems so difficult right now to be a libertarian and just say, hey, both sides are wrong. Both sides, you know, the West and Russia, right, have messed this up. Because it's a core belief, right? It's a principle that we're supposed to hold. The NAP, the non-aggression principle. There's a lot of libertarians out there right now that seem to be A-okay with just the non-aggression principle. It's just something I speak about. It's something I don't really care about. I don't care if somebody else violates it. They seem to be perfectly okay with somebody else violating it right now. just so they can say that either, oh, well, Russia's bad or the U.S. is bad. Newsflash, they're all bad. It is these state powers that are going to war. It's not the people of Ukraine and the people of Russia. You have Russian protesters in St. Petersburg and Moscow getting arrested and thrown in whatever jail that they're being thrown into and taken off the street and beaten. That doesn't sound like a unified front from Russia, does it? But again, we have libertarians, Beltway libertarians, and even these other, I don't know, extreme libertarians, or they think they are. It's an okay thing to say that the Ukrainian people should be free. But apparently, to a lot of libertarians, nope, can't say that. That seems so far removed from what libertarians think should be going on. It seems so far removed that libertarians think Ukraine should be left alone. This is a difficult topic, apparently, for some people. It's a difficult conversation to have. It's troubling to see, to be honest. I was in discussion with somebody earlier today. They didn't even refer to Ukraine as a country. They called it and the Ukrainian people. What should we have done with it? There is no we in this conversation. And this is a Beltway libertarian. This is somebody going to George Washington University in D.C., a Beltway libertarian. This is what you get when you try to play by their rules. You think, you know, it's a big club, right? We just ain't allowed in it. They don't want anarchists in it. They don't want real libertarians in it. They don't want people that really believe in liberty in it. They want people that are going to repeat what they were told that their opinion needs to be by the 6 o'clock news. That person then went on to tell me that I was just spewing out Russian propaganda. And then went on to provide a news article from 2014 that supported what I said from USA Today. So I don't know how much further from Russian propaganda you can get. These Beltway libertarians and the other libertarians I was talking about, I'm seeing it from Agorist now. And a lot, there's a lot of other libertarians, you know, there's some ANCAPs in there too. These people that are kind of the other end of the spectrum. It's all America's fault. America and the West definitely played fault, but so did Russia. America and the West didn't invade Ukraine, did they? But no, we're left with a moron in the White House and probably one, well, what I thought was one of the smartest guys to ever run a country. I still think he's pretty clever. I think he just played his hand 5 years too late, but he needed that catalyst, right? He needed a reason to go in, and Ukraine, for him, he felt, gave him one. So what has the West done? Since this has started, it's been going on about a week. What has the West done? They've been selling a lot of weapons, offering asylum, and not even offering a whole lot of asylum. Countries like Hungary, though, and Poland are offering a lot of asylum to the Ukrainian people. But just last night, in Joe Biden's State of the Union address, he is proposing and trying to get Western allies to go along with this to have a no-fly zone for Russian aircraft over Ukraine. Essentially, he's calling to start shooting down Russian aircraft. That's an act of war, man. Why on earth? Why is the world going to risk nuclear war? And I don't mean this to be offensive to the Ukrainian people, but over Ukraine. A place the size of Texas, 40 million people. I'm trying not to be offensive to the people of Ukraine when I say that, but ending 8 billion lives over 40 million, where most will make it out alive anyways, now they'll be under a horrible regime. I'm not saying they should capitulate, but you get what I'm saying. Like, how is it going to escalate? From 40 million lives being in the balance, and we knew it wasn't going to be everybody in Ukraine was going to get killed. It's going to be a small percentage. To possibly 8 billion. Billions, definitely, if this goes totally sideways. These morons are going to risk nuclear war. I hope many of you, and I know it's nobody here, right? It's nobody listening to this show. But those that did, that voted for El Presidente Biden, Trump included, I'm going to put him in there, left us with this situation. bad American policy and then horrible statesmanship. Bad Russian policy, and clearly now we're seeing how bad the statesmanship has been there as well. What is it I heard today? Everybody thought Putin was playing chess, but it turns out he was playing poker. And we still don't know what he's gotten up his sleeve, right? We still don't know the hand he's willing to play. This can go sideways quickly. We'll see how good these statements are, right? I worry they're not good enough to avoid this. I really hope they can. I really hope they can. Because I don't want somebody 150 years from now reading in a history book somewhere, screaming at it, going, why didn't they stop? Why didn't they stop? Didn't they see what was going to happen? Why didn't they stop? Hey, if somebody's listening to this in 150 years, trust me, there was plenty of us that saw what could happen. You know, good statesmen can get us out of this. I don't know if we have the right ones. But the best solution, you know, the best solution to avoid war, get rid of the state. Abolish all states, because it's states with nuclear weapons that go to war with each other. I don't want to end on a sour note, of course. I always try to leave with a more upbeat message. But this week's a little tough. For what it's worth, the Ukrainians are fighting like banshees. They're putting up one heck of a resistance. And that is something, like I said, whether it's patriotism or because they were conscripted, one of the two, which we don't agree with, you know, as libertarians. No, conscription is not part of it, man. That's another violation of the NAP. They are putting up one heck of a fight, the Ukrainians. And it doesn't help, too, that the Russians have just messed this invasion up from the start. Tanks are running out of gas. The soldiers are out of food. It's a mess. On a positive note, and maybe it's very hopeful, we are seeing Russians protest the war in Russia and around the world, really. There's a lot of Russian expats that are protesting the war. We're seeing a lot of Russian soldiers that don't want to be there. Hopefully they'll just kind of turn around, or they'll stop fighting or just go get captured. So for all those Russians that are against the war, speaking out against it in Russia and abroad, we see you, we hear you, and we love you. And please, as loud as you can, let the Russian government know this is unacceptable. And those of us in the West, we have to take notice. We have to be as loud as we can, because they seem to be beating the war drums as well. We do not want war in Ukraine. We don't want Americans going into Ukraine. We don't want Poles going in there. We don't want Hungarians, Moldovans, Germans. The West cannot get into Ukraine. We do not want to go to war, and we just need to really push this peace movement. This is a pro-peace movement. It's not an anti-war movement, but it is a pro-peace movement. And this is a war that does not need to happen and can be solved. These issues can be solved, and they will be. They will be eventually. They will be solved at a negotiating table. Before I sign off, guys, I want to remind you of the affiliate program that I am a part of. So if you go to coffeebreakliberty.com, in the upper portion of the page, next to the store tab, there is an affiliate tab. And I want you to click on that affiliate tab and check it out. Essentially, though, I am affiliated with Bluehost. Bluehost is the hosting company that hosts this website and podcast. They do an amazing job, offer great rates and great service. And if you use my link to get your website and host your website through Bluehost, not only are you going to get a discounted rate, but you're also going to get free publicity on the podcast, the Instagram, the Facebook page, the private social medias. You're going to reach thousands of people right away with your new website. It might be a business, and that might be your new side hustle, maybe your main hustle. So go to coffeebreakliberty.com, click on that affiliate tab, and sign up with Bluehost today. Last thing before I sign off, guys, I want to remind you again that this podcast is now on Apple, Google, and Spotify. Yes, we're on Spotify. So we are on the big three podcast platforms. And of course, we're still always on the website. You can always listen to it on the website if you want to do that. And, you know, if you don't like using Google, Apple, or Spotify, you can always go to the website at coffeebreakliberty.com. But until the next time, guys, take care.